All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast of Jay Bird.
Steve, how's it going?
Pretty good, guys. I got to apologize, Jay. I was talking to Jay last night. I'm driving back, and man, I hit the worst traffic, Jay. I turned a three-hour drive into six, Jay. So we were talking last night. It was forever, so I apologize. We're a day late, but hopefully not a dollar short. It was ridiculous. Jay, I was out on an errand. Do you know what the errand this was?
Yeah, I know about the errand.
Shorty got low.
Mini-me.
Had to go pick up Jody Michaels' Mini-me boat. It's the Steve Paul special miniature version. So
Jody, yeah, the gray ghost.
The gray ghost. She's got the gray version. Jody has the tiny version of my boat now. She hates when I say that. So I was down there. I'll say this. Tread lightly if you find yourself in an Alabama Wendy's in pink shoes, Jay.
Oh, you went to Alabama? I didn't know that.
Oh, okay. I was down in Alabama, man. I'll tell you. We can make fun of Alabama because literally no one from Alabama even knows what a muskie is. So there's that.
No, they don't. No. Nope.
I actually have a couple clients from there, but nonetheless. So I'm down in Guntersville.
Oh,
down in Guntersville. Mighty Guntersville. Down in Alabama. So
that's football country down there.
Oh, it is. I literally, you say that, and I literally heard a guy say Roll Tide at a Wendy's.
It's like, oh, Roll Tide. That's what they say.
Roll Tide.
Yep, sure.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I think you do that when your child's born or it's Christmas. It's death in the anything. I think there's
you just shout it.
Roll Tide, you know, whatever. Just whatever, you know. You're being executed. Roll Tide. there's not a... Listen, I can't think of an inappropriate time to say Roll Tide, Jay.
No, it's polite. It's forceful. It gets the point across. It's beautiful.
Roll Tide. Anyway.
And so, I don't know what it means.
Anyway, yeah. Well, oh, man, that was that. You know, I told Jay, I said yesterday, we'll get it done earlier. And I thought I was going to watch the old football, you know, all this. No, I'm in an Alabama Wendy's. That's what happened. So now I'm on the road here fishing out of town a little bit. So if you hear the snappy room reverb, that's my cheap motel, Jay.
Well, you know, you get that close to Nashville, you know.
You know, you get over here in the cheap motel district.
It's all about the recording studio.
The ambiance. It's the Abbey Road of $70 a night hotels.
You got a fridge in there though?
Well, I have a fridge for my Pepsi. So we're on the we're on the mobile podcast setup with mobile Pepsis. Anyway,
what more do you need?
Not much. Jay brought up something interesting. I think we are.
I did?
Technically, barely. If you take away the Booker tactical episodes we publish on that, I think we're about to hit episode 200 here in a minute.
Well, knocking on it. Isn't that something?
It is.
Unbelievable.
So, wonderful. If you like the podcast, do me a favor. Go leave a nice review on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen. That's appreciated. Every now and again, we get somebody saying something stupid. My favorites are the ones where they say we're childish. Those crack me up, Jay. It's like,
come on now.
Come on. We're chatting. Jay's freaking, listen, I'm a 42-year-old man. I don't give a shit what you say. It's like, no, Jay, do you know most of our listens come from Guantanamo Bay? They use this podcast as torture for enemy combatants. Did you know that?
Did you know they used to play Metallica?
They did. That was
and Metallica petitioned them and said, hey, could you please, we don't want that stigma.
Right, yeah. As torture music. So then they called Jay. They called Jay, and we were able to work out a deal with the Department of Defense where we do this podcast. So if
you listeners out there think we're doing this for fun. No,
this is work, baby. This is a CIA
all
psyop.
That stuff. Yep, all that's it's black ops stuff. It's right. Black
skunk
site
works
stuff. It's all that stuff is done for a reason.
So if you think
America,
America. If you think we're talking musky fishing, this is literally just a torture podcast.
They play it so loud for those poor guys.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just, if you can imagine.
Wait to hear next week's song.
Right. A Jaybird. And you just hear that and you're sitting there, you soil your orange uniform and you start giving up the location of caves in the desert.
You do.
You
they,
do.
They can't hold back.
There's not much you can do.
Can you imagine being in a dark room with strobe lights flashing every once in a while, listening to me sing?
Like, literally, like, they just play the DJ Tommy Fresh intro repeatedly.
Then all of a sudden, Hello, Minocqua, and Ryan's, it's like, oh, God. The guy's like, I can't stand any more of this.
Right. Episode.
What do you want to know?
They start them at episode one. No one's ever made it to episode 12, Jay. They just they tell you where the Cave of Secret is.
They're I'm all about results.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you, government. That's why we have this fat military contract. We appreciate it. Anyway, yep. Jay. It's wonderful. What's going on? I know we got the Northwoods Fishing Report. Josh Krieger's back on the horse there, and they're starting to put some nice fish in the net. Things are cooling off up there.
Yeah.
You know, temp-wise, water temp-wise, how far do you think we are from the old turnover?
A ways. I mean, you know, we're getting some warmer weather. We're getting average temps, you know. Mm-hmm. I think average is like upper 60s for high right now, right. And it has not been cold at night, but... some of the local boys, there's some local Northern Illinois boys police officer tournament going on right now. Right. Guys we've known for years and years and years, and one of them had a four fish day yesterday. Some of the other guys doubled up. I believe a small group of guys got 11 fish, so mm-hmm. they were really happy. It's a shallow bite. These guys are seeing shallow fish, and it sounds like, you know, your traditional bucktail kind of presentation is working well up in the weeds. You know, we were talking about that, I think, last week about early fall transitions and patterning, yep. And it's happening right now. It's happening. Really nice. You know, it's, you know, highs in the 60s, and you got some nice cloud cover. And anyway, it's a good time to get out fishing right now. So muskies are snapping.
I think they're snapping. I think realistically, I think this is the last week of serious heat going to deal with down south. We'll see. Okay. I mean, who knows? I mean, it could be 95 in October in anywhere anymore. It's so unpredictable.
Yeah, right.
You know,
get a short blast of it or something, but yeah, for the most part, yeah, leaves are turning around here. It's like, it's right around the corner, baby. Could snow any day now. Not really.
Well, don't say that. That's when the seasonal depression sets in for Jay. It's, oh, God. You know, you get the...
Yeah,
you get the snow sad.
Anyway. It's a real thing.
Well, yeah. I don't have access to the internet right now, Jay. What are the comings and the goings at the Muskie Shop? Is there anything of note, or what's sort of going on there?
Oh, the comings and goings. Oh, boy. Put me on the spot. What did we get in the last few days here? Just a ton of restock stuff. Very got nice. Some new reels. Got a new small Daiwa Coastal reel.
Huh.
It's a smaller, extremely light size that's geared kind of as a light musky presentation type platform.
Is it like a 300 or something? Or?
It's a 200 size, actually.
That's pretty small.
Well, you know, but those little Daiwa TWSs are pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, if you... You got small
bite backs, Spooker Slotmaster spoons, Titan Juniors. Still got some cranes left. Got some Grabbits. The tool everybody wants.
That's been crazy.
This, that, and the other thing. Well, we got a good supply of hottail, assorted hottail stuff. You did a short with me on the
what's that thing called?
Lockjaw crankbait.
That's cool.
Yeah, right? Freddie bought one and got a fish on it.
Did he?
Fred from the shop. Yes.
No, guys, just shop. Random with Freddy.
Just people are like, who's Fred?
Who's Fred? You know? Fred from Fred Palermo.
Also had a comment request. I don't know, this isn't something you can deliver on, but I'm going to try my best. It's almost sucker season at the Musky Shop, and Stevie and I worked on you did most of the work. Did an excellent job doing an extremely detailed how to catch muskies on musky suckers.
Ooh, I did.
Remember that?
not much. I was pretty faded. Faded when we did that, Jake.
I'm going to be working on that, and we'll put that out later this week. I'm not sure what day yet. Maybe Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Just got to finish it up, and it's because really cool because it's a longer video. It's really in depth. It's got a lot of cool information, guys. That you can take to heart for this fall.
Well, the thing with this, we've got in the works. We've got a long form video sort of covering a little bit more advanced tactics or some minutiae on some baits. And we did the sucker vid. And like, you know, it's not like it's going to be action packed, but if you want to dial in on rigging suckers and how to catch them, that's where we went for. It's like YouTube's a dead zone anymore anyway. So it's just basically a learning thing, and we'll be on the Muskie 360 app on the shop's YouTube anyway. So that'll be cool, you know, because who doesn't love a good sucker, Jay?
Yep.
You know,
yep.
I'm a sucker for a sucker. But that's gonna be funsies and gozies there. Other than that, man, we're sort of getting into that part of the year like we've talked about before, where your weekenders are weeding out. Once the football starts, Jay.
Yeah, school's back in session and all that. So
yeah, now we're getting into the hardcore. So we talked a little bit about that fall transition. We'll hit some Q&A here in a second because I'm traveling here, but I thought it would be, from some of the questions that we got hit with this week, it would be of some merit to sort of cover some structural conversations that apply to the fall, right? So
okay.
We talked last week, and I'm sure we glanced over, touched on, I referred to the other podcast about structure fishing or the my book or whatever it is. But crawling down the rabbit hole in this thing, there's a nice snappy reverb. Did you hear that? Snappy. Sorry, I apologize.
It's wonderful.
Jay, do you know I might have ADD?
Really?
Hold on, Jay. There's a raccoon outside. I got to go run him down. Take him, folks. This is why they play this. The number one podcast in Guantanamo Bay.
And Ireland,
actually, in the Netherlands. But nonetheless, we'll move
Netherlands.
On. Netherlands. What I think has merit here for people that are going to go through this hot, we talked about it, the hot bite that's going to be up shallow, right? And then the next phase. Structural elements, I was on the boat and I was thinking about a couple really good questions I got about this. What structural elements really stand out to me as those fall transition zones? Now, you know, if I'm glancing over it, I'll say, you know, that first break, that first as we're coming out of the depths and the first contact point, all that stuff, that's great outside the littoral zone. But something that really resonates with me when I talk fall transition, when I'm on the water, what I'm looking for, one of the biggest things is points, right? And a point's a simple element in any body of water here. Hold on, Jay, I'm going to spark a long dart. What do you think, Jay?
Okay.
Yeah, I don't recommend this, folks. Especially, this is what you do when your wife's not there. You spark a dart. Anyway, the scenario being that points connect in a lot of scenarios. Let me back it up here. A main lake, a major point, can at times connect the shallows to the main basin, right? In next level musky fishing, I touch on how important points that connect that main basin area to the littoral zone or the shallow zone are, because they provide a transitory route from the depths to the shallows, right? One foul swoop. If I'm a muskie and I need to go to the main basin, it works for me. If I want to be shallow, it works for me as well. So I have this transitional structure back and forth. When I'm thinking fall transition, spring transition, anytime muskies are probably most likely post turnover, whatever it might be, or excuse me, cold temps, muskies are looking for this transitional zone. If your body of water has a dominant point that in some way, shape, or form, structurally, meaning there is some kind of leading structure, there's a regularity that ties into the main base, and that's going to be a really good focal point, right? I don't see how that can go wrong. That applies for a river. Right, you have points in rivers, and you'll see inside turns, outside turns, right? So usually on the outside turn, you'll have a deeper hole, and you'll have erosion on the inside turn, but you can actually get kind of a point thing going on. It's a traditional point, but you can have, where that water slows on the inside turn, you can have a sediment buildup and things of that nature where it goes from the shallow zone to the deep hole, right? So yeah. Is it a point? If it by definition is a point, but it serves the same purpose. So it's a ramp. Jay, I've often said we're ski-tarded, and sometimes you have to take the special people's ramp, right? So the muskies are taking the special people's ramp. It is a smooth transition. It's not the steps. It is the smooth glide up and down, right? And so I'm looking for those elements that tie deep to shallow. So how do we approach a point? Let's say we take one step back. Let's define some more things about points. So anybody can look at a lake, Jay, and you see this big finger, if you will, sticking out into the lake, and you go, that's a point, right? Hey, sure. Great job. Congratulations. Bing, bing, bing,
I'm
bing.
I'm good.
You're good, boys. Jay can find points that are not submerged better than anybody I've ever seen.
That looks like a good spot over there. Don't let luck or feeling determine your... Okay.
Listen, don't stop. I need that angling edge sometimes, Jay, and you cut me off and I don't get the whole delivery.
Well. But
whatever. You'll get these elements that are obvious. It's a blatant deal. I want to look at that on a topography map and on your bathymetry map, whatever, your lake map, your whatever you got. And I want to see how this obvious point connects to the main basin. Does it protrude out into the main basin, or does it protrude out into a river channel or whatever it might be, a flowage? Study how that conjoins with other elements. Sometimes a point will drop off pretty drastically and it sort of rolls out there and it doesn't go further than the first or second break, right? Kind of a minor point. The ones, like we mentioned before, these points that protrude all the way out and they transition in some capacity all the way to the main basin, past the first contact point out of the basin, holy crap, they're dynamite, right? These minor points, these points that break off before they sort of protrude out further, you know, a little less attention. The things that get looked over quite often are subsurface points. Now, you could call it a bar, right? I see. And there's, I'm not going to go down, I mean, I do it in the book, whatever. I'm not trying to hawk the book on you. That's not the point. But if you really, what's the difference between a bar or a point? Blah, blah, blah. Moving on. I'm looking for anything that protrudes into the lake, right, that connects the shallow zone. So not every point is exposed. Like I said, Jay can find main lake points with trees on them better than I've ever seen. But sometimes you'll look at a map and you'll go, huh, there's this structural element, this quote-unquote point or bar or whatever you want to call it, that comes from the shallows and it tapers down and it looks like your traditional visible point on a map. Is that systemic of flooding? That systemic of you know, the water level, the topography, whatever's going on there? It doesn't matter. The fish don't know. Paying attention to these elements that connect that main basin. That's all we're looking for. So those are obvious kind of things. You can't miss those. Now, let's say we've talked about it before, Jeb. We have bodies of water that don't have obvious structure. They have very little structure, right? The smallest features are going to be the best features, right? If there's no basis of comparison, I've said it before, muskies don't know any different. Wherever they're born and raised, that's the only environment they'll be in.
Yeah.
So the structure available to them is dominant structure. So you can have these tiny 5-foot, 10-foot protrusions off the shoreline that become the main points. Now, they're going to have a higher impact or a higher level of attractiveness to feeding muskies and bait fish if there's nothing else in the area that sort of is better than. But the hierarchy thereof of points, if you will, is going to be how far and how far do they protrude? And in that aspect, how much of that depth change takes place? So if they come out and it's a really, really shallow and it falls off a cliff, I'm not as interested as one that sort of has that gradual slope, that wheelchair ramp effect, right? 45-degree angle and it's getting up, shallow.
Sure.
It's a smoother transition. So this time of year or past this time of year, when we're gearing up, we get rid of that shallow water bite, paying attention to points. So we got that covered. Jay, could you feel like you could find a point on a map now?
Yep. I'm good.
You're good? Okay. How would you find? Walk me through it real, Jay. What are you looking for? Are you looking for the depth change, the color change, the squiggly lines, the protrusion? How do you find one on the map? What are you thinking? If you've never done it, what you going to look for?
Yeah, you're looking at those lines, which indicate change in depth that form a physical point as opposed to have a roundness to them, have a sharp angle, and like you said, something that protrudes into deeper water and is wide enough that it's got, like you said,
a shallow top and
a ramp. It's just not a drop off, but an actual ramp.
Right. Fair enough. Sometimes it's better to let them hear the J words. Maybe it registers. So we're looking for a point. Why am I focused on points? Well, that smooth transition. Now, it doesn't have to be smooth, but it's not a steep break. Where we talk in the winter, the cold winter, steep vertical movement. Fall transition, smooth, right? They're still coming up shallow. So these points are going to be a dominant musky structure once we get out of the shallow bite or on tough days. So how do we approach a point, how we fish it? First things first, a strong study of the structure, again, is important to understand where it connects to the main basin, if it does, or how far it protrudes. The secondary concern is going to be having either waypoints or the usage of marker buoys to really have a conceptualization of this point. All right, I used some buoys, Thursday? We cracked into one on Kraken, you know. How old school is it to have buoys out? I don't know, and I don't care, but I got them in the boat, right? The old
You used buoys. You didn't. They weren't existing on the lake. Like
no. I'm talking
structure markers. Yeah, you were throwing buoys, them out. Old school. Okay.
Yeah. And for me, it's one of these deals where, I had great anglers. They're actually from Maine. We were fishing this situation where we needed to mark sort of the cover we're throwing at, but it wasn't obvious. You couldn't visually see it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
sure.
So to have those marker buoys gave us a target. Made our life way easier. There was no question, you know, and as we edged into them, and what it was, we're working Kraken, so we're tapering from a high cover to a deeper cover, right? And those marker buoys allowed them to go, okay, keep it high. And now you have a feel for when I should sort of break it down this weed line, right?
Yeah, cool.
I do the same thing with points. And a lot of guys, it's so antiquated, right? And it's not systemic of not, I have panoptics, I got all the crap, I got electronics. I still like when I'm fishing a point and I'm focused on, I like having that visual target. So I know, okay, according to my map, the terminating end of this point where it becomes one with the main basin is where this marker buoy is at in the neighborhood, right?
How long was this point roughly? Like 40 yards? I'm trying to picture it.
I'm not throwing a point with those guys, but we were throwing some cover. But I like this same concept for a point where I go, let's say I'm looking at my graph on my trolling motor, you know. Yeah, I might have reasonable boat control. I might have perfect boat control down this, but the devil's in the details when I'm throwing across the top or throwing down. I'll talk about how to throw at these things, but I like that visual marker for highlights, you know? So if I'm trying to pattern where muskies are on a point, I might want to target the end of it, like the where it transitions from its shallowest section to where it starts tapering off deeper, right? Drop a marker on that and then go way out to the very point where that thing terminates and it coalesces into the main basin, right? Because that's an important part. I keep bringing that up because there's some merit in understanding where a point terminates, because that's where some of your most negative and neutral or big fish will be holding at times. And I like to mark that where you go, okay, now I have this target to throw up. You know, here's where this first transitions into slightly deeper, and here's where this, you know, terminates into the deepest water. Now that visual target of a buoy, as old school as it might seem, really makes my life easier, that I'm not so worried about holding the brake line with my trolling motor. I know if I'm a reasonable cast from these visual targets, I'm hitting what I need to hit.
Yeah.
Now the reason you go, why, you know, I haven't used marker buoys in eons, because that's stupid. Well, as a guide, I might have to convey to people of different skill levels of what we're throwing at. And the other thing is, this is how to conceptualize structure. And I think one of the problems that people run into is the mental conceptualization of how a structure is a, you know, how it's positioned in the water, or let's say there's a curvature to this or whatever, right? Like the point turns, well, and right?
They can't see your graph. They're not watching that. Right. You're illustrating them very well by doing that. That's a great idea.
So you've got sort of your highlights, and this is what we're throwing at. So you got a target. I like to do that. Even, you know, if me and Jay, like if we were doing, I might do that and drop it like the first pass where I go, okay, boom, 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 boom. I got it in my head. It helps with boat control. It helps with casts. It makes sure that, you know, I know that this is dead on this and I can sort of have my boat control. So that's something to keep in mind. Like I said, for all the amazing electronics I have in the boat, sometimes some old school marker buoys, I mean, mine are beat up as dog's not, Jay, but they work, you know.
They're no longer yellow.
They're no longer yellow. They're kind of sun faded.
Mm-hmm.
They've had plenty of glow sticks tied down for night fishing. We did that here recently, and I can't convey how awesome that is to have marker buoys out when you're night fishing to really know what you're throwing at as well. The same thing. So you got a visual reference. But so if we're tackling a point, and say it's a new point, something we don't know that well, let's break out the marker buoys, you know. If you don't have marker buoys, you could freaking do some 80-pound braid, a sinker, and a damn Pepsi bottle. I don't care what you do. Have a visual reference. So let's, you know, theoretically, we're going to mark this point so we have those transitional zones. We have that visual target. What I want to do after that is, how are we going to approach a point? What are we going to do with this point? How are we going to pull a fish off of it? You know, the earlier in the fall, when we're still thinking about this hot blade bite and all this stuff, comes back to what I said about that first break off where the point sort of plunges a little deeper. That's going to be an important point to target, part of the point.
Mm-hmm.
Important point. It'll be important to your game plan to target that first break on a point when we come out of this shallow bite, because you might have fish that are right up on the top of a point where you hit them with blades, hit them with top water, but as they work their way down. And a lot of that you can do casting from the outside, right? Let's say we think those fish are, everybody visually conceptualized, let's say a point comes off a shoreline and it breaks, its first kind of break into deep water is 15 feet off the shoreline, and we've got a marker buoy there, and it goes from like 6 feet and plunges down to 10 and keeps going. You know, you could position your boat, throw a bucktail, throw a crankbait, throw some rubber into the shoreline, work it back and connect with a fish, right? Basic. Mm-hmm. Everybody does that. I think what's interesting is we get later into the fall, or when fish start doing the funky stuff, when people, everybody else is trying to find them, is reverse fishing points, right? So why I like to have that deep target, that terminating point on the terminating point of a point, is it allows me to have a visual target when I'm throwing to quote unquote open water, right? So if I have a visual reference on the shoreline of this point and it sort of belies its topography, that's one thing. But if I've got the boat flipped around and I'm not even throwing at the shoreline, I'm throwing at open water, now it gives me a really solid target where I know my casts are at least in play, right? I'm not guessing. And that's crucial to how to target fish that are on point during this fall transition as we get later in the year. So a lot of times if we're past turnover, we're into this later stages where people are struggling a lot, and you go, man, the fish were up here, we were slaying them a week ago, and now it's over with. Reversing the boat positioning, we've talked about that. Bit casting deep points. Now, that'll allow, you could actually set up, Jay, you could set up, think of Freddy's point, right? Freddy's weed point, which is actually a structural weed point. It's the main point in the lake me and Jay love to fish, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
We've done it on tough days where we've gone into this point, nothing. We've come out and we've actually cast the open area towards the terminating end of this point and caught fish, even in bad conditions, right? So repositioning your boat, even on in a summer bite or early summer, midsummer bite, doesn't matter. You can pick up fish that are using that deeper structural element. But I think it's a primary consideration once this shallow hot bite ends of fishing it from instead of from outside in, inside out. Okay? That allows for a couple things. The presentations can now be A, counted down, or worked at depth and worked up, right? So instead of trying to achieve depth towards the boat, throw a bulldog, throw a kraken, throw a tube, throw a medusa. Let that sucker sink down and then work it up the point. A lot of these fish are going to be structurally tight this time of year, right? If I'm reversey, Jay, just to sort of prove the point here of points, prove the point of points. If I'm trying to throw towards a shoreline workout, it's going to be a little bit different for me to achieve running depth, right? And a lot of times I'm positioned right over top of the fish, so I'm just running over their head, working with tighter to the shoreline and throwing to the open water. Your crankbaits will really have a better running depth. That's one of my biggest things. So like a Livingston Lures Pounder, a depth rate, or whatever it might be, cast out, work in, you're going to be in the zone a little bit more. Your big rubber presentations, tailoring them up the point. Now, regardless of how big a point on your body of water is, the understanding of the structure comes into play here again, right? So we talked about understanding the topography and how the composition of this thing's, not the composition, but the actual form of it.
Yeah.
So okay. If I'm working, casting towards deep water and working in, I need to make sure my presentation is, you know, contouring as much of this as possible. So you need to know where the other highlights are, right? So we talked about the first break into deep water, the first section of a point that becomes deeper. We talked about that main contact point of the basin. The next thing I would really put a marker on or think about, it doesn't have to be an actual marker again, but is where does it really start rising again? So you get your first break down, but you know, you think about a point, Jay, either it's like that really smooth wheelchair ramp, right? Or it's humpy or bumpy. So are there any irregularities on this dude, right? In between that shallow section where it first breaks into deep water and that contact point, I want to mark or really have a good feel for where those irregularities are. And I'm not saying irregularities in cover, I'm saying irregularities in structure. Does it have a hole, right? Is there erosion there? Is there something that differentiates this point structurally? Now, the way I've found this in the past, this is a really good usage for your side scan sonar, right? How do you break down a point to find the things that are money on it? Side scan sonar, right? Slow roll that thing, drive down one side, drive down the other, or whatever. Maybe you got two. I don't know. Whatever. However you do it, start looking for things. You'll understand. Oh, wow. Where'd that divot come from? Right? There's a little hole. There's a little crevasse, Jay. There's a crevasse. There, sure. You know, whatever. I hate that word. There's something in most of these. There's some kind of the thing, the magic thing. And I've got one point, like when I'm talking this whole thing, there's one point I have in mind at home. And it's just got this freaking money spot, right? Just if your cast lands on it and the fish is there, guess what, Jay? Boom. Shakalak. Mm-hmm. What were we going to say?
Well, it could be a transition in bottom composition too. I mean, rock going down and all of a sudden the rock ends and it turns right into sand and there's some kind of irregularity in the structure at that point.
Right. Well, like you said, it could be rock. It could be sand. It could be muck to other muck, you know, fur muck to you say that and like using the side scan will be beneficial there if you have down scan. Dude, the bottom composition, if you're reading your down scan, your 2D or whatever, we see, you know, your return, is it a dense return or a soft return? That's crucial to have an understanding of because you can find that. I'm thinking less rock, but I've seen, not at home, but there's one in Canada I know of where it's a soft composition and then it's like soft over bedrock, right? And that's a money little section there. It's a Canadian little point there, but understanding that will allow you to dial in on that kind of like that point, that spot on spot, right? A lot of times during the fall, we get in this mid fall. I keep saying that. It's like, you got this early hot fall bite, right? They got the winter stall fall. Let's just call it mid fall for lack of a better term, because mid fall is when everybody sort of, craps their pants and can't catch one. Well, they're behind you most of the time. But it's crucial that you have an understanding there. So I would recommend, if I'm going to really delve into this, do the side scan sonar thing. If you don't have side scan sonar, drive over this thing, zigzag with it, using your down scan, right? And look at bottom composition and go, wow, there's a transition. Is there always going to be something? No, but most of the time there's something going on there, right?
Yeah.
You know, what caused this to not erode like the rest of the lake? Now, current, that's a whole other animal, right? But understanding that lake scenario, the compass is at its point. So we have our main target zone of that shallow zone. We have our main contact point where this thing becomes one with the main basin. And now we've tried to find something in between. Well, guess what, Jay? What does that adhere to? Shallow, mid, deep. Ding, 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 ding. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. Right? Well, guess what, Jay? If they're not shallow, where are we going to check?
We're going to work our way down.
Yeah, we're going to check shallow, mid, deep. So now we've broken this point down to shallow, mid, deep. Okay. Obvious point, points. Well, you can have cover on it, right? In a reservoir, you'll find riprap. I always say riprap. That's one thing I'm bad about, Jay. I'll say riprap, and it's riprap, I think, is an actual thing. But I mean like limbs, trees, and crap will get caught if there's current on one side of a point, right? Look for that on reservoirs on the upstream side. You'll see weed growth, obviously. That's not an issue. You'll find weeds on points. What's interesting about points, especially Freddy's weed flat and that point that's off that on that lake we like so much, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That is a good spot year-round. Weeds or not. Has little to do with weeds. It has to do with the structural composition, right? Because it's a transitional zone from deep to shallow.
Transitional zone to basically the deepest water in the lake.
To some of the shallowest.
Shallow flat.
Yeah,
it's just a wonderful spot.
Right. But
and the beautiful contour on it on tops.
Yeah.
On top of the whole thing. So, yeah, it's got everything going for it.
It's money. But you look at the possibility and the probability of the scenarios, you might, this time of year, you'll have some kind of cover in conjunction with the structural element. So, yes, we want to pay attention to that. We want to tailor our presentations to that. But we get the midfall, we keep going, man. It's going away, going away, going away. That's where the structural importance of denoting the section of a point are so important. Another thing that can happen when we're fishing points is the width of the point, right? I feel that like if you find a point that's like really wide, there's some lakes that have just monster wide, this mega point, right? That comes out and it just juts out in the lake and it's hundreds of yards or it's 100, well, not hundreds of yards, but 100 yards or whatever, something ridiculous.
Okay.
You might have to break that down into its own sections, right? Where if there's some like big flat on top and just some ridiculous oversized animal, right? Break it down and you're going to have to look for deeper meaning, right? You'll have to sort of break it down.
Maybe that spot, maybe cover will come into play a little bit more.
Cover, or it might be.
It's just like, okay, there's a little bit of cover on the east end of it, so that.
Yeah, it's so freaking big that it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Or, the lake that we like over by Robin and Steve's place, they like their watering hole they love so much. There's a tiny little point on that, right? We've moved some big fish on that. Yeah, that's easy to wrap your head around.
Jay's point. Yeah, sure.
And then you got these other lakes where it's like, there's little ones and big ones, Jay. I don't like my points long or too short. I like them somewhere in the sweet spot. Just the right sweet spot. But nonetheless, if you have a body of water where it's just like mega point, take what we're saying and then break it down in sections in some capacity. Other things that come into mind in this. reservoirs. A lot of guys are gearing up. It's going to be southern musky craziness here shortly and all this fun stuff. Current. The productivity of a point in current on a reservoir can be heavily influenced, obviously, by how it's situated, right? So if we've got an upstream downstream thing, the backside of a point, man, fish will like be forced by current, right? Bait fish, they'll come over the top, and guess what, Jay? On the other side, it's the hurdle of death.
Yeah, that's the ambush area of the muskies.
Right, so current will really change how they're staging directionally. I don't really change how I'm approaching a point structurally. I'm not conceptualizing it any differently, but if current is present, I'm no longer worried about this lake scenario where I'm throwing mid shallow deep. I'm going, what side is the current hitting? How is it situated? And what kind of velocity are we dealing with? Is it really heavy? Is it really mid? Is it nothing? And that can influence how I'm going to approach that. Now, you know, if I feel like there's current, and it's, let's say we had a big rain for 2 or 3 days in the fall, Jay, on a southern reservoir, right? Or a Midwest reservoir.
Yeah.
And we got a point. And they're blowing the dam out, and there's significant current. It doesn't have to be a raging river, but stuff's moving, right? Mile, sure. Mile and a half, whatever. There's just a drift. I'm going to look at points as a heck of an ambush place for muskies that are waiting right over the crest on the downstream side. Now, it would behoove me to get behind those fish, throw past them, and bring it towards them. If they're situated where they're facing upstream, right, in what little current might be present,
and they're you want to bring it by them, not sneak it up on them.
They're waiting for something to crest the top of this point and go back down, right? So hurdling the point, the bait fish are going to be confronted with the point with current to their back. They're going to come over the point and they're going to go back down. Muskies are waiting on the other side. So I want to present from behind those fish, cast over the top of the point and contour my presentation back towards me. Now, is it going to be at the top, the mid, the deep, or somewhere in between, or whatever, some contact point, whatever it looks like there? We'll see. You got to work that out as far as like the daily pattern. But if current is present blowing across a point, that can be a money situation. And I've seen it, Jay, where like, you know, in my younger years where I didn't have it all figured out, and I don't have it all figured out now, but I knew less than I know now, of making this cast where I'm throwing, like you said, I'm throwing behind the fish, working it past them and over a point, and go, man, there's nothing here. And then you come back later and you do it the reverse-y for some reason, and bam, right? Just getting smoked. So that's important. I think the same thing would be said, though. We've talked about river fishing. I think the same thing could be said there for those kind of points in rivers and playing with current. When you say, what do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, if you can, it's always nice to work upstream and throw upstream and bring the bait downstream. Mm-hmm. So it's just like saturation casting, you know, when we've always talked about, especially with shallow fish. I mean, how many times, you know, muskies hit on the first crank, they hit right away. It's like, well, you threw it right on them. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, you know, the presentation landed in front of them, guaranteed. It didn't land by their tail or past them, because that doesn't work. They don't do a 180 and hit it like that. So sometimes you got to get lucky, but if you can put yourself in a position to bring the lure from in front of them and past them, it's a lot easier for them to feed and ambush that way.
Right. They're expecting it to come from that direction.
They're expecting it to come from that direction. That's exactly.
Yeah, we've talked we've talked about it before. Is if actively feeding muskie is staged in such a way that he expects something to come from somewhere. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's not arbitrary. He's going, I've done this 8 million times. This is where I eat lunch on Tuesdays. You know, here's Tuesday lunch. Sure. And this is where I come down here and eat my sucker once every Tuesday. And this has worked for the last 18 years. It'll work today.
Yeah. It's worked for me in the past. It's just like, this is a good spot. I'm going to hang out and wait, you know?
Right. And it's funny. Well, not to go down a side street on this too heavily, the way muskies are habitual, and if it's worked for them in the past, they'll continue to do it. So that's why you feel like, okay, every time at sunrise, old Larry's over here or whatever. You know, it's not like...
That's a good point. Right.
It's not like one of those things of like, you know, Jay, how many times when you're going to the grocery store, do you just pick a random grocery store? Do you just go to a random one in a different town?
Good point. I go to what I know, and I know where stuff's located, and it's quicker and more efficient that way, isn't it?
Thank you. There you go. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't go to, you know, we go to Bourgeoisie Kroger by my house. We have three three Krogers in town. Like, Jay.
A Kroger. I don't even want to know.
My town is dominated by Kroger and Walmarts. We have... like freaking you could hit a golf ball and hit two Walmarts and three Krogers. It's ridiculous. And they're building a Publix, which is just even worse. I didn't think grocery stores get any more bougie until you got a Kroger with a salad bar and a sushi chef and a craft beer bar. They kicked me out of there already, Jeff.
We don't have these things in Wisconsin.
They said, sir, it is 9:30 a.m. You need to leave. Sorry, I'm teasing.
If it's happened once, it's happened 100 times.
Yeah, no, I didn't get kicked out of Kroger.
Next thing you know, there's change missing off your drawer.
So.
Yeah, I mean,
Hey, hold on.
What?
Whew.
False alarm.
Another
raccoon.
Another raccoon situation, Jay. It's kind of...
You got footprints all over the hood. Little muddy claw prints.
Little prehensile thumbs.
Yeah. They were looking for them chicken wrappers.
Whatever, man. They can come down here and get a chicken biscuit, though.
Smell it.
They can, them Rakens knew all about it. But anyway, I think we're talking about the expectation of where a muskie thinks a bait's coming from. Sort of like a shooting lane, and we've talked about that, where, you know, a bow hunter's going to set up shooting lanes because he has an expectation deer is going to come into this clearing. Muskies will set themselves up a stage in such a manner that has worked for them in the past, right? The same is going to play on these points. You'll find that throwing upstream and working downstream. Now, if current is an element for you in throwing upstream, working down, obviously it's going to get screwed with crankbaits and things of that nature. So we need to be aware of our running depth. The more current you have, the more it's pushing the bait from behind, yada, 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 right? So you're not going to achieve the same running depth if you have a good amount of current behind the bait, right? So you either need to make a longer cast, retrieve further, or add weight to said bait to acquire the right action to sort of target these zones.
Sure, sure.
I think as we get in that we're talking this mid-fall thing, if I'm targeting current and I'm targeting these elements, I think rubber really plays there just because you can have a lot of control over its sink rate and things of that nature. So that's going to be an important factor of bait selection to target these zones. Now, parlaying into, and we're delving in on one structural element here to crazy town. Another great way to target a point is trolling, right? If they're adhering to that structural element, they're using this ramp, for lack of a better term. I'm trying to keep it goofy and stupid here. But a point is a ramp from the deep to the shallow, right? And everything in between, all points in between. I keep saying points, but apparently I use the word points far too much, Jay. I've never noticed that.
No, it's okay. I understand.
But, Brent, so we have from that contact point, that transition to the main basin up to the littoral zone on a major point. And that transitional sweep between the two. If I'm having problems contacting a fish, casting this, constant contact with the bottom or jamming things into this point as I cross the top of it, right? So I might want to hit the side of a point with the trolling bait and drag it over the top if there's no cover, like weeds or something of that nature, get it snagged up and work it up, because these fish are using structure, therefore they're probably structurally tight. Yes, you will get fish that will suspend over points. Duh. It happens. But we get into this mid-fall, into the later fall thing. A lot of times they're kind of bottom tight to this deal. So trolling, you know, say you're on a one rod today, taking a straight depth rater and banging that thing one pass and bang it up and down the side, right? Come back and you're just S-ing down this thing as much as you can, right? Go out, swing it around, bring it across, swing it around, bring it across. And you can let line out each pass and sort of incrementally make contact with this point all the way down. And I think that's something that just doesn't get done anymore. I know Booker used to do it. I know he used to do it all the time. Is start at that shallower thing, make sure I made bottom contact, go swing the boat around once I get across the thing, tight turn, come back, make contact on this side, and just beat that thing to death, right? I'm not.
And you'll always go from shallow to deep. You'll always check in and try the shallow and then work your way down.
Yeah. In a perfect world, I mean, you know, we get into winter. I'm not going to check anything less than 5-6 feet.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, yeah. But, right.
You know, in a perfect world, I mean, we all want the shallow bite. So let's start shallow and work out. Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. If you're dialed in on a pattern, say you've been there for a couple of days, you got the weekend, and you're just drilling them in the mid or whatever, that's something to consider. You don't have to go haywire with it, right? But I like to work the thing down and taper it across, you know, the top of the point, make that contact as I'm just blaring down the thing as much as possible, right? That's going to be important to just do that. I'm probably going to apologize, folks. I don't like sounds. You heard a car alarm. You're going to hear maybe a buzz. Let's see if this is a ground buzz. That's going to buzz a little bit. I apologize. It's my laptop charger, Jay. I'll try to get it out of there. But making that contact across the top, bang on one side, bang on the other is great. You can, and I've done it before, start with, say, like a reef digger and go from that contact point where the point merges into the basin and work your way up, right? I prefer, in a perfect world, if I have it every way I want, I want to work that side-to-side thing, and it sort of lets me know what side they're coming off of a point and sort of how to pick them up as we're going there. So, anyway, what else would you say, Jay? What would you add to the point of points?
What would I add to the point of points?
What have we missed? What have I not thought of here? What do you think?
Well, I guess... You were talking about a little bit about presentations and it's kind of a crankbait. Okay. Well,
rubber.
Let's go crank. Back here. Yeah. I mean, rubber's ideal in my book, because even if you're working from deep to shallow, you can throw a bulldog out, which has a pretty quick sink rate.
Right.
You can count it down, not necessarily literally count it down, because they sink faster than 1 foot a second.
Right.
But you can let the bait achieve depth and then bring it up, and you're bringing it up and you might be banging a little bit. Well, you lift the rod tip and you give it a jerk upwards and get a little bit more height out of the retrieve. Mm-hmm. And you could work it up a slope that way up your little ramp. And, you know, the same goes from working from shallow to deep, and the same goes for, especially with current, because mm-hmm. plastics like Medusas and bulldogs, they're always working. And one problem you're going to have with working blades in current, you know, if it's blowing a mile and a half, 2 miles an hour, that's a lot of current, and you're bringing it downstream.
Right.
You don't want the blades to stop.
Right.
Plastics are not going to do that. Even if they stall and you're not retrieving fast enough,
they're doing something.
They're doing something, so they can be very effective. Even, well, of course. I mean, we're basically talking about pull baits / jerk baits. Mm-hmm. And you know, when do muskies hit, Steve? When do they usually hit?
On the pause.
So that's a good thing. You know, it's hard to get a muskies to hit blades on the pause too often. So up top, super shallow, sure, yeah, cover with blades, absolutely, especially early fall, because they're effective as all heck right now. Yeah, there you go. That's all I got.
Jay, when do you break out your Beetle Spin from the Johnson Company?
Only when I fish with Two-Tone Tommy, Master of Ceremonies.
Jay Essie proud to present the muskie size Beetle Spin.
Yeah, all right. What do you think, man? Okay, think about Shumway's classic
hothead.
Yeah,
that's a Beetle Spin.
Basically, an oversized Beetle Spin.
It is.
Baby's work.
That's it, Jay. All
Beetle skirtless.
Spin. all Beatles spins all the time. Other than that, well, let's. I hope I got the point about points across.
Yeah, some good stuff, man.
Raccoons tried to raid my
raccoons everywhere.
Yeah. Anyway, I got a couple questions here that put up on my phone. I've not read them yet. It says Todd Miller, Tomb of Bacon Third. My name's Todd. My friends call me Nipples.
Oh, God. Okay.
Fair enough. Do you have an extra one? Is that why? Is there a reason? Did you have an affinity for said name that you just... And I was wondering if you have an estimated drop date for Kraken. I'll be in the Northwoods, yada, yada. I'd love... They won't be there in September. It's going to be later than that. I apologize. I think October, we're hoping. Anyway, I'm reading on here. He's also wondering how the audiobook is going. Slow. We'll get to it. He's excited to listen to the sweet nothings of the word of Steve, as he calls it, while I lay in a warm bath with scented bath salts, playing of hairband instrumentals in the background while leisurely practicing a figure eight in the air before my wife breaks in and starts to yell at me that the raccoons and possums got to see that it's a premonition. There's a raccoon on my truck, Todd. Huh. There's something wrong with you, and I love it.
Yeah, how's Tyler, he know?
I fish a gravel pit lake that has stained water, mostly steep banks with fawn trees. It does have several acres of 5 to 15 foot flats with no weeds. Any suggestion on finding fish as we head in the fall transition? Well, gravel pit lake, right? We just really banged it home on points. But if we have these zones at 5 to 15 foot flats, let's look at those transitional zones. Let's say this gravel pit lake, Jay, it has no points, right? Referring back to what we've hit of these transitional zones where structure changes, right? Now, the reason I just beat up points is a great place to focus that mid-fall bite. But for somebody that's looking for fish that you don't have that structure element, those minuscule important changes, like you look for the devil in the details. So let's say we got this big vast area that goes from 5 to 15 or whatever these flats break off. Devil's in the details. Find the tiniest little elements you can there and make them work for you. Let's hit one more here, Jay. We you know,
hit it hard.
We're working through this here. I'm on the road again.
Can't wait to get back on the road again.
Mark says, gentlemen, I'm an infant muskie angler. A few years ago, I moved close to a small 42-acre sand pit lake. We got a gravel guy in a sand pit lake. That's muskies. I've gone from fishing panfish my entire life to target these majestic beasts. The lake is very clear, 8-foot-plus clarity at times, and has steep drops at most of the sides with only a shallow area that has a point where it drops to deep water. Ooh, okay.
Beautiful.
There are weeds due to the clarity. I've always fished the handicap dock because I have no boat, and we get some follows on bass tackle, but no commitment, so I switched to live bait. They seem to prefer crappie. Okay, fair enough. That'll work, baby. Pretty long thing here. He talks about ice fishing, live scope. This goes on for a minute. I apologize. Okay, basically what we're getting at, this guy's trying to get his musky game down, right? And he's fishing a clear body of water. He asks, what's about a half dozen baits that are going to be the best baits for him to target fish? They will eat live crappie, things of that nature. 6 baits, clear water, Midwest. What are we thinking?
And no boat, right?
And no boat at this juncture.
Okay, and it sounded like he's accessing like 8 feet of water. Is that what you said earlier?
Yeah, well, he said 8 feet. He's got 8 feet of clarity.
Clarity.
Right, and mobility around the edge of a lake. If I'm a banker, floating baits, right? So I'm really thinking crankbaits, right? So I would freaking depth raider. I mean, it's tried and true. Right, so let's go depth raider. Let's go spinner baits. Hard to snag them, right? It's really hard to retrieve baits from the back. You can't get behind them, right? So I'm thinking like versatility and as well as bank friendly. So depth raider, you're gonna have to feel for it. You might hit a piece of timber and let it float up. Steve's meat grind a spinnerbait, you're just going to throw it out and bring it in. You won't get it hung up in anything hardly ever. So Steve's meat grinder, a depth rater, interchangeable, you might Livingston pounder or whatever you think. Something in that zone. Cisco kids float, Jay? I just had a brain fart. I think they sink.
Cisco Kid 1800s. I mean, I've got some that are about neutrally buoyant, so
I don't think
most of them have a very slow float.
Yeah, so something that's going to achieve depth on a crankbait, but it's going to have the ability to float up.
Like you said, a straight depth rater. I mean, you could work 0 to 10 basically on that from the bank on a long cast. So.
Right, spinnerbait's going to be money. I don't think any. Tackle box is complete without a bulldog, right? Get you a mag dog. Now, what I'll say about that is let's learn the spot, learn where the snags are, learn where the nasty stuff is first.
Yes.
Don't just go winging that thing out there. Take your meat grinder and feel for things, okay? There's a tree under there. Bad. Don't throw there. Learn what's going to hang you up under there first. There's apps like the Navionics app and some other things online that you can get a topography map. So we got a depth rater, we got a meat grinder, we got a bulldog, clear water glide baits. I would go with the classic 6-inch Phantom. I don't think you can call yourself a musky fisher. Maybe I have a 6-inch soft Phantom.
Yeah.
There's four. What else? I mean, you could do blades, you know.
I mean, you could. I like the spinnerbait in that situation from shore.
Thing.
Yes.
You know, so you got a bulldog, you got a blah, blah, blah. There's four of them. What else? Throw two of them in there, Jay.
Okay.
Sandcat, Titan, something, diving risey. You know, you're sort of covering the bases there in a different.
Well, a Titan, yeah, you could run a Titan because you got the versatility of changing the depth on that in
flat
seconds.
Back,
like you said, you learn where the cover is and the snag. So let's say the weeds come up, you know, 4 feet, and it's like, okay, that spinnerbait's, you know, on a long cast, it's tipping something. Okay, feels like weeds. Yep, it's weeds. Okay. Run the intermediate weight on the Titan, and you get a slow rise to it,
and work it over it,
and let it come up slowly as you tick the cover and tick and click and boom. Hopefully, you get one that way.
That would
pan out well for you.
You know, if I'm throwing from the bank and I'm, you know, cover all the bait classes but cover them well, I would probably go with the little bastard because you can throw the cool thing on bank fishing. You can throw the parallel bank behind cover, behind weeds, right? With little topwaters, and that is deadly, right? Get out in the water, throw behind throw the back side of the weeds with a topwater. Those little topwaters are really good at that, Jay. You never know what's going to blow up there. So that covers your main bases. I think like I said, if I'm going to bank fish. You know, it's tough. You can't figure eight hardly ever, right? Unless you get out and wade and then you're just, you know, knee deep and figure eight and treble hooks by your feet. And it's fun, you know, but just sort of think of perspective. I think we sort of came up with the basic tackle box pretty much anybody should have. But from the bank, it's about application. You know, learning the spots, learning the hang ups. Like I said, the biggest thing, dude, you throw out a bulldog's what, $29 now? Something like
that. Yeah, the first four baits that we just went over, it's not gonna cost you an arm and a leg,
right,
really.
But,
and
what I'm saying, you don't wanna lose it though. You don't wanna bomb a freaking. That's the thing. I've seen dudes from the bank. I've actually helped guys from the bank get things like, give me your rod, I'll bring it right back, right? Because it's really easy to get something unsnagged when you can get behind the hooks. Hooks only work in one direction. So that. Anyway, well, Jay, I will be home hopefully for next week's show. It's just ridiculous. It never ends here. Like I said, I apologize for a day late here. Anyway, I hope we covered the points of points, Jay.
The points of points.
Fun. We've been having people ask. So maybe next week, let's try to throw something else in there. We delved down the rabbit hole of some other mid-fall structural things here to help you get dialed in a little bit there.
Perfect.
Anyway, we're coming up. We'll have to have another ridiculous. We were working on a ridiculous intro before I had to help go get Shorty's low. Shorty got low.
Did you hear the song I cut yesterday?
Despicable. Anyway, say goodnight, Jay Burton.
Night, guys. Thank you.
Later.
Bye-bye.